Now, this intro story, I know you weren't here for this episode, Lockie, but we had a episode entitled our eulogy episode, which probably this would have been a really good intro story for that episode. But hey, considering what we are going to be touching on a bit later in the episode, maybe it does work in a way. Now, this comes out of IGN. It was written by Ryan Disdale. The Yakuza, or Like a Dragon franchise, is known for being a tad wacky, but publisher Sega is bringing the weirdness to the real world by basically hosting a funeral for all the series' dead characters in Tokyo. As reported by Famitsu and translated by Silicon Era, Sega is teaming up with department store chain Parco to host an exhibition where players can visit fake gravestones and leave flowers at portraits of the deceased video game characters.
Oh, that's kind of sweet. It's kind of cringe. It's kind of sweet.
It is. A play on the latest game, Like a Dragon Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name. The event will be called Like a Dragon, The Men Who Perished. It will cost 700 yen, which is around $5 to enter, and will run from December 30th to January 15th in Ikebukuro, Tokyo. Subsequent exhibitions will take place in Nagoya from January 20th to February 4th. So right now, if you're in that area, and Sapporo from February 16th to February 25th. We won't say exactly whose graves can be visited in the exhibition to avoid spoiling the games, but fans can also buy merchandise of their favorites, dioramas, bookmarks, death portrait charms, face towels, gravestones, incense sticks, postcard book stickers, tear-shaped can badges. What? Tote bags, t-shirts, and more. Lockie, has there ever been a game that you've played where you would have liked to have been able to pay your respects to a character that sadly passed?
Well, not necessarily a character, but entire gaming companies like Square Enix is clearly dead, or the version of Square Enix that I loved died a long time ago. And whatever the current Square Enix is like, I don't know who it is, but it's definitely somebody else wearing the face, the rotting corpse face of the original Square Enix, and still saying that they're Square Enix, and I don't know. I don't buy it. So I wouldn't mind, you know, putting it to bed, giving it a bit of a Yuna-esque sending from Final Fantasy X, so we can properly grieve and move on.
That's totally fair. I think a lot of weebs out there would argue that Final Fantasy 14, I know how much you love MMOs, Lockie, is still good. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not into that either, and I'm not into pretty much anything that Square Enix has done over the last half decade, particularly when they wanted to get into NFTs. I'm glad we could put a rose at that gravestone of the NFT market in the games industry. Thank fuck.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, with the whole MMO thing. I'm gonna throw some pretty controversial takes out there. MMOs were kind of the worst thing to happen to turn-based single-player RPGs, because once that sort of took off in the WoW category, we never saw anything quite at the level and quantity and quality that came just before it. So I'm thinking about World of Warcraft 3, 1, 2, 3. I'm thinking about the original Warcraft 1, 2, and 3 that came before it, and basically is the exact same story, but told well and entertainingly. I'm still waiting for the next Warcraft game. So
you're never going to forgive MMOs for what they did to Blizzard Entertainment, or what Blizzard Entertainment did to itself.
Well, this is the thing, but it makes money, it's widely packageable and scalable, and they don't need to really invest that much. They don't need to release quality new products, they can just do endless DLCs, so it's cost effective. So I understand why they do it, but it was basically the death knell of those quality games, and that's why, you know, people look back to those times as sort of the golden age, where you were getting, like, fucking Diablo 2, 1 year, the next year you got Warcraft 3, holy fuck, the next year you got Starcraft. I can't remember the order, I probably got the order butchered, but it was just like bang, 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 just the best top quality shit. And so high quality that Blizzard went, wow, we're gonna make franchises out of this stuff. They didn't know that they were bankable franchises before that point. Unfortunately, they just lean fully into MMOs, and they're probably, you know, 1,000 times richer as a result. But I don't get my good games, so I'm sad. So I'd like to hold a funeral.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's funerals for two game companies now. I think my funeral...
Oh, there's so many.
I'm playing through The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered, and there's definitely a character. I won't say who their name is in case you somehow haven't heard. That I would definitely like to have a memorial for, that's for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought this was... It's not really a funny intro story. It's more just... It's super cute, and I don't know. I like it. People love their games, and... They love getting all parasocial with the mediums that they like. So I think this is a cool, healthy way to do that.
I think it's awesome. And this is one of the great things about sort of the Japan culture is you can tell that they're very passionate about the things that they produce. And you can tell that there's a bit of spirituality sort of being incorporated into it, which, you know, I think is a really sweet, cute way to look at, you know, some of their fun games. Fuck Blizzard.
Rip to the goats of Yakuza.
Fuck Square Enix.
Welcome to News to Reviews, your place to be for gaming news stories, and also your place to be for impressions on the latest games each and every week. My name is Zach, and I'm here with my co-host, Lockie. Lockie, how you doing?
Hey, it's Lockie. I'm back. I'm back and ready to go. I'm full of energy, and I am really ready to take on 2024 with a bang.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Nah, I'm really sick, but I'm going to be pretty low energy. Oh,
God. I'm impressed that you managed to pull that energy out of nowhere. Like, now this isn't a visual medium, but you did not look right now like you were capable of pulling off what you just did. No offense.
Oh, thank you.
You look like shit, Lockie, that's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, I love that.
Don't worry, even at your shittiest times, you still look far, far better than I could ever hope to look, Lockie. Oh. You handsome devil, you. Now.
Oh, thank you. You're sweet.
Now, I mentioned at the start of the intro story that it's kind of apt that we're doing one that's about a memorial, and that's because there's a couple of things I want to talk about at the top of this episode. The first of those being that Brendan White from The Hungry Gamers and from 8-Bit has announced that The Hungry Gamers is over. He's ending the show. He's got a statement up on his Twitter if you want to go check that out. He hasn't mentioned if he's going to do one more episode or something like that. The most recent episode you can catch Lockie and I on. He let us be a part of the biddies and do a category. Oh, no, it wasn't you. It was Anthony, the other co-host.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I was like, did I? I don't fucking remember, but I don't remember most shit I did.
No, you certainly did not. It was me and Anthony. But yeah, go check out that episode and make sure check out The Hungry Gamers. I just wanted to say... I'm going to miss The Hungry Gamers. It was a big inspiration for News to Reviews. When I started News to Reviews, I was always looking at what Brendan was doing and all of my peers, but particularly Brendan, to see what awesome ideas I could basically steal and put into this show. And he's just...
We call it inspiration.
Absolutely.
We're inspired. It's not theft.
But yes, honestly, one of the best podcasts out there and the best Australian gaming podcast. Like, it shits on News to Reviews, that's for sure. The Hungry Gamers was just absolutely fantastic. Their banter was always great. The sound quality was always great. Gonna miss...
But we're better because we've outlasted them.
I guess so.
We'll be tap dancing on the on the backs of giants.
Absolutely. Brendan's always been a big supporter of the show. He reached out when we first started News to Reviews, offering support and advice. And yeah, I just want to say thanks, Brendan, for all the ways that you've helped us over the years. You know, you got us a booth at PAX. We got to record an episode at PAX, me and Aaron, and like some of the coolest experience I've got to have through doing this podcast has been through Brendan. Luckily, Brendan will not be leaving our lives as far as the podcasting world is concerned, because More Than Hentai is going to continue. That podcast is doing incredibly well. And yeah, so if you still want some Brendan in your life, you've still got that. I've been on More Than Hentai. People you'll know, like Sammy Deej, I believe, has recorded an episode. I can't remember. Anyway, I know Anthony's been on a couple of times as well too. Make sure you go and check that out. With that out of the road, the main thing I wanted to talk about before we get into the regular episode is that News to Reviews is going to be changing in 2024. So, like, for people who don't know, like, I kind of run the show here. I get the doc ready. I do the editing and organize all the guests and stuff like that. So, you know, if I'm not doing this, this thing is not going to happen. And, you know, it's always been a lot of fun, and I love doing this show, but it is also a lot of work as well too. You know, each week can range from me spending 10 to 20 hours by the time I research, you know, organize guests, record an episode and edit and get everything out there and do all the social media posts and stuff like that. And I've just found that I've not been able to move forward in other aspects of my life. And, you know, I can't blame the podcast for that. I've just wanted to make sure I put a lot into it. It's my own fault for not sort of managing my own time properly. But it's gotten to the point where it's like, look, I think I need to change how things work here if I want to achieve my own personal life goals. You know, I'm 30.
Yes, queen.
I'm 32 now. I'm getting fucking old.
You do you. Prioritize, girl.
So
get that bread.
My initial thought was, it's time to end News to Reviews. And when I thought about it gave me existential dread. I was like, this show, as much as there's been some episodes where it's like, oh, fuck, you know, there hasn't been a lot of news and I've had a really tough week, I can't be fucked doing an episode this week and I still just push through and get one out. And I'll still end up having fun when I eventually do that episode. But it's just, as I mentioned, I'm just not ready to completely give it up yet. And I still want to have some News to Reviews in my life because I love doing it. So, moving forward, News to Reviews is going to become a monthly show. So, for the most part, things aren't really going to change. You're just going to be getting less episodes per year. It's going from, 52 now down to just 12 episodes a year. I still want to do bonus episodes every now and again, but it's going to be in a situation where we're just really passionate about doing it rather than, we need an episode to put out while I go to a fucking wedding or some
That's
shit.
That's right.
Like
no
that.
More content milling for you, jackals.
Look, I always have fun doing those bonus episodes. They're always great. But, like, yeah, it's, you know, when it's just purely our creative passion behind it, I feel like we're going to get better episodes. And, you know, this will eliminate those episodes where we just don't have a lot of interesting news to talk about, because not every week is a banger week of news in the games industry, but every month there's
That's
at least
right. Not
one
every week there's a new Pokemon game, but yeah, normally every month there is, so
exactly right. Every month I feel like there's some kind of story that's interesting to talk about. So yeah, I think it will move now to basically the episodes normally come out on a Monday or a Tuesday. From now on, they will be coming out from the first Monday or Tuesday of every month, and that will be all you get unless we do like a bonus episode here or there, which we do still have some of those planned. I still want to keep doing this Worst Games Company series because that was a lot of fun. I recommend going checking out that episode. It's pretty miserable talking about Activision Blizzard for almost 2 hours, but it's a good way to get a culmination of all the shit that they've done over the years. So, yeah, I don't know, Lockie, how do you feel about News to Reviews moving to a monthly format?
Well, look, it's probably more accurate to my ability and my input in reality that has been the whole time leading up to this. So it's probably not a huge change. Thanks. Always a big, big special thanks to all to yourself, Zach, and also to all of our guest hosts and basically who have become our co-hosts through the podcast. Anthony, absolutely. Aaron, friend of the show. Hell, even everyone from the Inconsolables, we just, you know, it's taken a village already to just get me across the line. So I congratulate you in you know, focusing on the priorities in your life. And I see this as a positive thing, not only for you, but also for our listeners, because hopefully with a little bit more of a spacing between the episodes, we'll be able to really build up that better quality content. Mm. So look forward to what the changes will bring there. Also, I'd like to thank our listeners who have hung in there and have listened to our content over the years. We're not going anywhere, but I would like to just thank you for sticking it out with some of those dud episodes. I'm joking, of course. They're all amazing. So yeah, look forward to a new and refreshed 2024. Lockie's not really changing in any respect. My spirit animal has always been constitutionally wise, you know, the equivalent of the little boy whose holidays is where he just is in a wheelchair rolled out to the, you know, he's at the lighthouse or at the sea and he just gets to feel the nice feeling of the sea spray. So this probably works a lot better for me.
Oh dear. And yeah, I want to echo what you said, not about the last comment, but about, yeah, thanking the listeners. Yeah, thanks for everyone for sticking around over the years and all the regular guests that we've had on the show. The News to Reviews wouldn't be what it is without our guests. And yeah, I'm looking forward to obviously there's going to be a lot less guests now, but hopefully now we've got a good sort of crew of people we can pull from. So you'll be seeing all your favorites over and over.
So I've got a question for you, Zach. Now that Brendan is scaling back on the gaming side, there's going to be clearly a vortex of beardless content out there. So, like, because he has an amazing beard, are you going to try and grow it out to try and match that energy and fill that void?
Well, you know what? Brendan is famous for his salt and pepper beard, and the other day, Mira found a grey in my beard. So
it's already happening. The universe is already figuring everything out. All things in balance, my goodness.
In time we will find out. But yeah, thanks everyone for sticking around over the years, and I look forward to seeing what the next year brings. Who knows, maybe a year or two down the track, News to Reviews might change again, become more frequent, or the format might change. I don't know. But thanks for coming along this journey with us, Lockie. Can't be fucked doing some plugs. I feel like we've talked, or I've talked at the very least, for long enough for the time being. Should we jump into the gaming news?
The only plugs I'm looking into are hair plugs in Turkey.
Our first story is Xbox had a developer direct, which I didn't watch last year's one. But basically, it's just like a typical event, except it's more developer-focused. Like, they're going to have the developers there talking to the camera, explaining about the game that they're making. Last year, they did the shadow drop of Hi-Fi Rush, which was really cool. Very well-received game. Shout out to Sammy Deej. I know he loved that one. And this year, we haven't had a shadow drop, but they have showed off some interesting stuff, so let's get stuck into it. The first game was Avowed. I did send you those trailers this morning. Did you get to catch any of them?
I skimmed through them. That's so funny. I did look a little bit at them. So I have thoughts.
Okay. So, yeah, Avowed.
Can I just say really quickly with Avowed, like, I love the idea of it. I love old Bethesda style first person combat where, you know, you got a bit of magic, you got your sword, you block with your shield, but the graphics looked all right, but I don't know, it felt like there was a bit of jank behind it, like a bit of jank in the physics, the structure, the bones of everything.
I totally agree. I think it's generally a problem with any first-person melee stuff. I don't think anyone's ever really nailed it. It has improved over the years. I do think it looks smoother than, like, melee combat and magic in Skyrim, but it should do because Skyrim was, like, 12 years ago or something
years ago.
Like that.
Like,
yeah,
it's a relic now. Jesus.
Yeah, I see what you mean, though. Like, I'm excited for Avowed, though I don't know how the fuck I'll play it. Just purely because it's Obsidian. I haven't played anything of theirs that I haven't liked. I think they're great developers.
I said they were Bethesda. I legit thought they were Bethesda.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, this is Obsidian. So, this is the Outer Worlds developers.
Yeah. So, they want to be new Bethesda. Yeah.
That's what gives me hope. I love the Outer Worlds. The stories in that were so interesting. The characters in that were so interesting. I had a better time in that contained 50-60 hour RPG than I did in the entirety of Fallout 4. But yeah, I see what you mean with Avowed though, Lockie. I don't know what it is about it, but I see the gameplay and just something isn't quite hitting for me. But I think maybe it's more just purely in the visual aspect. The environments, there doesn't seem to be a lot going on. You're just seeing an environment and a few enemies or a few NPCs plonked around. I'm not seeing, like, you know, insects flying around in the background or, you know, like, you know, games these days will use particle effects to, like, put, like, you know, god rays with you know, the sun shining through dust and stuff like that. I'm not seeing any of that kind of stuff. And something about the color palette is just a little bit weird to me, but that stuff aside, I don't know, I'm still excited for Avowed. Do you reckon you'll check it out when it comes out?
Oh, look, I absolutely, like, you know, it's something that I'll keep an eye on, and I'm super curious. I hope it does well. I hope it's a banger. I agree. I think a little bit more incest in the background will probably, you know, do it a world of good. It worked for Game of Thrones. So, yeah, we'll see what...
It was not in the background in Game of Thrones. That incest was front and center.
That's true.
It was literally the... Anyway. Well, if you do end up picking up Avowed, Lockie, you can look forward to playing that hopefully spring this year for us Aussies, or fall if you are an American. But the next thing they showed off was Hellblade 2, which is now actually got a date, 21st of May. And...
More like Dev Hellblade 2, am I right?
It has been in development for a long time, you are right, Lockie. And I don't know, from what I saw in this developer update thing that Microsoft is doing, is it just looks like more Hellblade. I didn't like Hellblade, so I couldn't give a fuck about that, but a lot of people really, really did, so I am happy for all you peeps. They apparently have improved the combat. They show a very brief snippet of combat in the Dev Direct gameplay thing. It was even hard to tell which part was the actual combat and which was just a cutscene that was playing out or a quick time thing. So I can't really speak to it looking improved. I guess it's marginally improved over the very basic shit they had in the first game, but I don't know. What did you think of it?
Commenting on the trailer overall, they seemed more interested in showing the process behind the game than the game itself. And that's always a really big red flag in my mind, because it's sort of like misunderstanding the whole point of, we don't give a fuck about the process behind the game. We just want a quality content game. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Like, only really diehard fans or people that really, you know, want to appreciate the technical splendor of it may look into that sort of stuff after they've consumed the product, not before. Like, yeah. No one was interested in the making of The Lord of the Rings before The Lord of the Rings came out. But after it came out and it was a banger, that's when people were interested in the craft and how did they get there. So, like, yeah, I don't know, cart before the horse type situation.
Look, just quick asterisk to that. It's only purely because it's the developer direct event. Like, the whole purpose of this event, it's like to showcase the developers and the games they're working on. So that's why they throw in snippets of how the game's made as well too.
Okay. Well then, I don't know. I think the entire thing is like poorly conceived because no one gives a fuck about the developer. I'm sorry, developers out there. Like, we love what you do. We love you, and we love the things you make, but if we cared about the craft, we would be developers ourselves, you know? Like, so it's kind of like, I don't know, like, I don't care how the sausage is made, I just want the sausage to be tasty, you know?
Look, personally, I do find that stuff really fascinating, like how it gets from mocap warehouse to the thing, but I care about it after.
I might be interested in it after, not beforehand. It's like, you know, just show me your end product and I might be interested in the craft.
Shit. Yeah, you're right. It does feel like there's a bit of hubris there. It's like, oh, look what we did to make this masterpiece. And slow down there, girlfriend. We don't know if it's a masterpiece yet.
Exactly. Like, you know, the the race isn't over yet. Fucking, like, yeah, no one likes that guy.
So, 21st of May, it's not going to be a day one for you.
No,
I didn't think so. Yeah,
no, if it's on Game Pass, I might give it a go. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be on Game Pass because it's a first party. It'll stick around. It'll be there when you decide you want to check it out. But the final game that I wanted to talk about, and probably the one that I was the most interested in out of the entire developer direct, was the Machine Games, the developers of Wolfenstein, making an Indiana Jones game called Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Great, intriguing name. So interested to find out what that circle is.
That's like such a dumbed-down version of their most recent title, The Dial of Destiny, which is also a great circle. Like, you know, it's just weird. It's like AI wrote that. Allegedly.
I need to see someone, like, do up the cover art with the guy. This is a deep cut for any H3 fans out there. With the rectangular guy and be Indiana Jones and the Great Rectangle. You know, the rectangular
side. Oh, that could be, yeah, that could be a good DLC.
That'd be great.
Take it in a different direction. Nice. yeah, no, I did check that one out. So, I do have thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck this game is. My best guess is it's gonna be mostly like one of those predominantly story-driven cutscene sort of adventure games with like the littlest bit of interaction and mini game esque things peppered in, kind of like what are those previous games that were made to look like Indiana Jones but were their own thing?
Uncharted.
Exactly. Yep. Uncharted. It's going to be Uncharted. That was what it sort of rang true to. Like that was the thing that came across to me. It looked like it really didn't want you ever sort of fully understanding what its gameplay was, and I think that's by intent. I think they want it to be like this high octane cutscene, whatever's going on in the cutscene, that's what you're going to be doing a little bit of, then more cutscene. I don't know. What did you think?
I'm intrigued, but I know I've a few weird issues with it, but firstly I'll say, holy shit, the graphical quality is insane. The facial animations look absolutely fantastic. And I was like, fuck, whoever is doing this imitation of Harrison Ford is doing such a good imitation. And then found out it's Troy Baker. Troy Baker is playing Indiana in this Indiana Jones game. And the character model is like this weird mix between Harrison Ford and Troy Baker, definitely more on the Harrison side. But yeah,
I thought it looked like Harrison Ford, like, completely. So
now that you know it's Troy Baker, have a look at Troy Baker and, like, look at it next to Indiana, and you'll see it, like, around the eyes. There's, like, a bit of Troy Baker in there as well, too. And
that would be just because of mocap. That would be, like, just simply because they're trying to capture all the tics and expressions and stuff. But I think the intent is that it's meant to be seen as that's Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford? I'm curious because,
yeah, like, I don't think they want you to be aware that, like, oh, I'm watching Troy Baker play Harrison Ford. I think they want him to just fall into the Harrison Ford, which I have thoughts on that from an ethical standpoint.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Well, yeah, hopefully if they did use Harrison Ford's likeness, they gave him a fucking truckload of money in order to do that. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, but I just can't help but think, and I know this is a big discourse on the internet at the moment as well too, that this game would be served better if it was entirely in third person, because they show the first person moments and for the most part they look quite underwhelming to me, and every now and again in this game when you're doing things like pulling switches or climbing certain things, it will zoom out into third person, and at all of those moments I thought, wow, this looks like a game that I want to play. People are arguing that this will, you know, give it more of a difference between Uncharted. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. Uncharted was already copying Indiana Jones anyway. Like, don't do first person purely to be more different. Though I think that's purely just because that's what Machine Games' specialty is. They made the Wolfenstein games. They're a first person game studio, and they're sticking with it for this one. But, you know, look at Respawn. Respawn used to make Call of Duty, then they did, it was ex-Call of Duty talent, then they did Titanfall and Titanfall 2, which are both first-person shooters, but then they made one of the best third-person games of the last generation with the Jedi Fallen Order and the Jedi series. So, first-person studios can do third-person games, they just gotta fucking give it a go. Cunts, try it out. I don't know. I don't know, do you think that's a weird criticism that it should be third person? What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I don't give a fuck as long as the game's good. Like, you know, if their creative direction and their design behind the game is that the end result is it's a quality game, it doesn't matter to me if it's first person or third person. Like, you do you, they in the industry. Yeah. But I really didn't get a sense of the feel of the gameplay. I think if you're going to enjoy this game, you're going to have to really like the story and the narrative that they're going to, you know, it's going to be predominantly focused on. I think it's encouraging because I think, you know, from production value, it looks amazing. Really echoed in your thoughts on, like, you know, the graphics and the motion capture and how everything looks. My mind is blown. That looks like Harrison Ford to me. But also, I find that super creepy, seeing someone that looks identical to Harrison Ford then being voiced by someone else. I kind of feel like I would have preferred if they couldn't get Harrison Ford to do the voice acting, like, you know, doing a different visual, like, you know, make Indiana Jones a little bit more like, you know, switch up the visuals. They do that with Batman and shit all the time. Like, so then that way the character itself is a little bit more malleable, and we're not always expecting Harrison Ford's face. Because let's be real, the guy's 80 now. It's not going to be around forever. And I just, the idea of, other people portraying his image after he's gone makes my skin crawl.
Yeah, look, that's a fair criticism. I'm not really into when posthumously they bring actors back for certain roles and stuff like that. At the moment, Harrison Ford is still alive. I can confirm that as of the 21st of January. So he can give consent for this. And I don't think Harrison Ford, I don't think you could pay him enough to sit there in a booth and record lines for a video game. I'm sure you could, but you know, like, there's no way they're going to put that into the developer's budget.
Do that with Megan Fox. She wanted that booth money.
Oh, yeah, well, Megan Fox is going to be far cheaper than Harrison Ford. That is 100%. Yeah, look, I can't say I have a problem with that. I actually thought it was pretty cool. We already do kind of have an Indiana Jones that isn't Indiana Jones, and that's Drake from Uncharted and also the Tomb Raider games. We have those ones. So it's cool to see an actual Indiana Jones in an Indiana Jones game. Especially, they've just nailed the tone. Like, all the voice lines and the music and the dialogue, it was perfect. It sounded like Indiana. So hopefully it's better than the last fucking two films that have come out, because if they're any indicator of what we're getting, I don't want to jump into that great circle. That is for sure. But another thing I don't want to jump into is talking about miserable shit, but we're going to do it anyway. Oh, dearie me.
Oh, so, goody. This is my favorite part. I love this.
Yeah. This is... look, I'm just going to read the story. Gamesindustry.biz, written by Brendan Sinclair. Game Developers Conference organizer Informa released its annual State of the Games Industry Survey earlier this week, giving a window into developers' experience and attitudes on a variety of subjects, including layoffs, generative AI, unionization, and on which engines and platforms they're making games. Informa's press outlet Game Developer worked with its market intelligence from Omdia to survey more than 3,000 game makers last October and found that the parade of headlines about layoffs in the industry had been reflected in developers' personal experiences. 35% of respondents said that they had been impacted by layoffs in the past year, whether that was in the form of being laid off themselves, which 7% saw that, or seeing their colleagues laid off, which 17% saw that, or having layoffs hit other teams and departments within their company, which was 11% of people. As for those who bore the brunt of the cuts, QA teams were disproportionately affected, with 22% of QA developers surveyed having been laid off in the past year. On the other end of the spectrum, just 2% of the business and financial professionals surveyed said they had been laid off in the preceding year. Of course. So there was also some pessimism about the trend of layoffs keeping up, as 56% were at least slightly concerned that their company would have had layoffs in the coming year. And for people who don't know, like, we did mention stories of layoffs throughout the year last year, but I don't think we ever really spoke about it as a whole. We saw over 6,500 layoffs in the game industry last year. And I know you might be sitting there thinking, Zach, that was last year. It's a new year now. Everything's going to be good and happy. We're only not even a month into the new year. There's already been over 3,100 jobs lost in the games industry from companies like Twitch, Discord, Unity Software, Bossa Studios, and more. So, yeah, Lockie, layoffs are a massive issue right now in the games industry. It seems to be a trend that's, yeah, it's affecting a lot of game developers. What are your thoughts here on this trend?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a trend or... even really, I don't even think it's different to just regular business. Like, companies restructure all the time. If you get if you don't get the sales and all the games and investments you're banking on in a certain year, then all the loans that you have kind of default and your stock value plummets, so you can't afford your org structure design as you currently have it. So
yeah,
it needs to reflect how much money the company can fucking afford. So it's not a good thing. It's always sad when it happens, but it's not entirely like an unknown. It's just sadly, this is kind of how business operates. I did find it interesting that, like, yeah, you're saying that the QA team cutoffs were disproportionate to sort of like more of the management side of things and the finance teams and really lose their jobs. But I guess on the counterpoint is, if a company's going through downsizing and restructures, then clearly their finances are probably the thing that they're most sort of invested in and working out. They're going to need to invest in analyzing and projecting what the new structure is going to look like and figuring out how it can actually make a profit someday again. And unfortunately, QA testers won't really be in a position to be able to add value to that conversation. So it's also kind of like, yeah, I see where you're coming from, and it sucks because it means that they're downsizing on the actual product that they're putting out, but maybe the company is going to need, like, a couple of years to sort of like put a pause on that and figure out what their new strategy is moving forward before they're ready to need those roles again. So like, you know, sucks. It sucks. It's not a good thing, but also, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. And yeah.
I think if it means anything to me, it's another clear indicator on how badly a lot of these companies or a lot of these game developers need to fucking unionize. Because yeah, I'm overseeing this trend. It sucks. This is the worst year since when we started the podcast over 4 years ago now of layoffs that we have seen. You know, we get like some stories every now and again of a big round of layoffs over the years, but last year in particular, it was just completely brutal. And we saw it just across the tech industry in general. And this year is looking like it's going to be no different, unfortunately. And yeah, to touch on what you mentioned before, the standout thing there of how, yeah, so much QA loses their jobs and only so much of the financial and management side loses their jobs. It's just such a frustrating thing to see, because the QA people and the developers, they're not the ones who are making any of the decisions that are leading to these layoffs having to happen. I'm just sick and tired of seeing people without power having to pay for the mistakes of the people who are in power over and over and over and over again. I think it's something that, you're right, it's an issue in every industry as well too. It's like it's a change that sort of needs to happen more broadly, I think, across our culture. You know, there's always the pendulum swinging where, you know, for a while things will start getting a bit better and labor rights will improve, but then the pendulum always swings back the other way and we lose a lot of that. And I think people forget, you know, that we have unions to thank for things like the weekend, for overtime, for all the things that we love and we deserve, for putting our lives and our blood, sweat and tears into these companies so that they can be profitable. And we don't get to reap the benefits out of that other than just the little bit that we get back every week or every year, depending on how you're paid. So yeah, I know it's like one of those existential things of, you know, what are you going to do about it? Just complain about it on a podcast? And look, that's all I can do. So it's all I fucking will do. And fuck you for questioning what I can complain about.
We're allowed to be unhappy with the cycle. Unfortunately, we will not be the breaker of chains in this scenario. Like, I don't know the answer to this, but at least we can point out the problem and bitch about it. That's our right.
And talking about pointing out the problem and bitching about it, I know you are going to have a lot to say about this next story, Lockie. It comes out of IGN, was written by Wesley Yin Poole. An executive at Assassin's Creed maker Ubisoft has said gamers will need to get comfortable not owning their games before video game subscriptions truly can take off.
Absolutely based Ubisoft. Congratulations. Once again, they just knock it out of the park. How's their stock looking?
Whoever their PR team is, just give them a raise immediately. You just always know what to say.
Yeah, see, it's when you see things like this, this is where, like, really, we should be seeing heads roll, because it's like, how do you fucking, like... Yeah, anyway.
So, speaking to discuss the launch of Ubisoft's new Ubisoft Plus Premium and Ubisoft Plus Classic subscriptions, oh my god.
Oh, oh my God. So creative.
I hate tears! Tears? Put me in tears. No more tears in subscription services. Just have one fucking tear.
The only tears I want to see is Tears of the Kingdom, baby.
Oh, fuck me. Anyway, Philip Tremblay, director of subscriptions at Ubisoft. Oh my God, that's a role now. Oh my God.
A director. A director for just subscriptions. Just the concept of subscriptions. Wow.
What is his job? Does he literally sit there and go, this will be in this tier? This will be... Like, how is that a position at a fucking... Oh.
I imagine, like, they have an entire department devoted to, like, analyzing how to eke as much money out of the consumer with like all of their subscription-based offerings. Mm. That's my sort of...
Well, Philippe explained to gamesindustry.biz that this needs to happen before subscription services become a more significant slice of the video game business. I don't have a crystal ball, but when you look at the different subscription services that are out there, we've had a rapid expansion over the last couple of years, but still relatively small compared to the other models, Tremblay said. One of the things we saw in that gamers are used to, a little bit like DVD, having and owning their games. That's the consumer shift that needs to happen. They got comfortable not owning their CD collection or DVD collection. That's a transformation that's been a bit slower to happen in games. As gamers grow comfortable in that aspect, you don't lose your progress. If you resume your game at another time, your progress file is still there. Blah, 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 blah. So it's about feeling comfortable with not owning your game. It's fair to say Tremblay's comments haven't gone down well with some gamers who prefer to buy their video games on disc as opposed to downloading them or streaming them. But it's worth pointing out that Ubisoft, like many other video game publishers, does still release its games on discs. And while digital sales have grown as a portion of overall sales over the years, a significant portion of players still prefer to own their games. Yeah.
The problem is we don't fucking trust you, Ubisoft. That's what it comes down to. And it's not just you, it's all industries. The problem is if we can't own a copy of the product that we have at a certain point in time, we don't know when, but we know it will happen at some point when some dickhead in the office will decide, like, let's get a little bit greedy and try and strip away, you know, like, accesses or drop out cloud support services for these games, and no one really noticed. This is what we're worried about, because it's happened time and time again, and it will always eventually happen. So until I see in writing a promise from you, Felipe, and your CEO of that time that the company will never do that, they're never going to do that, then I don't trust you, because like, I want to see legal documentation and consequences to breaking that if you do decide to do that as a company in the future. If you're not comfortable with taking that risk, I don't know why consumers should be comfortable with absorbing that risk. So let's make it a two-way street. You do that, I'll open up my mind to becoming like the music industry. But how about that? They'll never do it. They'll never fucking do it. They'll say, no, that's too risky, and no, we can't lock ourselves in, no, that's too much risk. And the reason why it's too much risk is because they don't want to restrict themselves to not being able to pull that bullshit in the future. And unfortunately, that's all the proof I need to know, okay, all of this shit is intended to go somewhere.
Yeah, like we've seen Netflix change up and add multiple tiers and stuff over time, and you know, things will leave Netflix and go to different services, so then you need to sign up for another service. It's truly awful for game preservation, this. It is kind of scary in that sense. You know, we don't know if Ubisoft is still going to be around in another 5 to 10 years' time.
Yeah, if you look at their stock prices, it's not looking great. Over the last 5 years, I think I saw their stock has dropped almost by 72%.
It's not looking good.
It's not in a time of great growth, and you know, like, they're not doing well as a company. So, yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, it's really scary. And we're already seeing this be an issue with movies and TV shows, with all the different streaming services, as I mentioned. And now I know that Best Buy over in the States is going to stop selling Blu-rays. Now, physical media is still quite present in Australia. For some reason, we've still very much hung on to physical retail. I don't know why we're kind of behind as far as that's concerned. Maybe because our internet is so terrible. But yeah, like, once Blu-rays stop being sold, that's just means that all of our movies and TV shows are just going to be completely up to the whims of the different studios that owns the rights to those shows. And if they decide to take them off streaming, kind of like what HBO did with, God, there was like 10 things they just like either cancelled or took off streaming. I'm pretty sure you can't watch Westworld now purely because they could save a bunch of money on taxes by taking it off the streaming service. They had a movie that was completely filmed, ready to go and put out because they could save more money tax-wise as a write-off. They just completely didn't even put that film out. It's scary to see that all these creative works just can end up being lost at the whims of a massive money-hungry corporation, and we will be able to do nothing about it. I'm terrified that one day, the next generation of Sony's next console, they're going to be like, all right, because we added this new chip in, none of your old games are going to work anymore. I'm going to have a library of close to 400 games that I've bought digitally, got as PS Plus extra games or whatever over the years. That's just going to be completely lost to the ether if I don't have a physical copy of that game. So, yeah, it's just a scary trend to see happening, and I'm worried about the effects that going all digital, and particularly in the subscription service model, what effects it will have on the industry as a whole.
I think it's all a bit of bullshit, but even if we were to accept their argument that, like, oh, you know, it's going to help save us costs, I'd like to see how those cost savings will actually translate to the consumer experience.
Oh fuck no.
But it's not intended for the consumer, but they're still expecting us to pick up the check and essentially relinquish a right and get nothing in return for it. Fuck that.
If they ever had any intention of passing the savings onto consumers, then digital games wouldn't cost as much as what they do. I know at the very least in Australia, the most expensive price you can possibly pay for a video game at launch is if you buy it digitally. That's insane to me. They're saving so much on shipping and packaging and all the stuff that they have to do to get it onto shelves. And we're just paying even more to save them that money. Like, yeah, they're having their cake and eating it too.
Yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, Ubisoft continuing to kind of prove that, you know, it's a good thing that their company is clearly financially in decline. because, you know, this is what they're doing with their power. They're trying to basically alter the industry objectively for the worse for the consumer. So, you know, if that's where they're at, I'm quite happy to see, you know, that dollar value continuously drop on a year-on-year basis. And they can be lost in the sands of time, along with their fucking franchises.
I thought you were, like, mixing up your references there and you meant, like, Tears and Rain, but, yeah, Prince of Persia.
No, I was going straight for the Prince of Persia one there. Yep.
Oh, now I pointed it out and ruined your great reference. I'm sorry, Lockie.
That's all right. No, I'm glad.
Anyway, we're talking about games disappearing. Let's talk about games that are going to be appearing in the next week. And we have... Oh, fuck. What's going on here? We have Graven coming January 23rd. It's leaving early access, coming to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. So, yeah, everything except for iPhone. Now, people who listened to last week's episode, our most anticipated games for 2024, will know that Andrew from The Inconsolables is very much looking forward to Graven and talked about it on that episode. So, be sure to check that out if you're curious about it. Then we have Apollo Justice Ace Attorney Trilogy coming to PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch January 25th. Shout out to Sammy D. I'm sure you'll be downloading that one. Phantom Abyss coming to PC and Xbox Series X also January 25th. Under Night in Birth 2 Celeste.
Shovelware, move on. Don't even give it energy.
PS5, PS4, and Nintendo Switch. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth is coming to everything except for Nintendo Switch on January 26th. And also on January 26th, we are seeing Tekken 8 coming to PS5 and Xbox Series X, you best believe Anthony is very excited about that one. Lockie, any of those titles there stand out to you?
Well, look, Graven didn't stand out until you told me that Andrew from Inconsolables was kind of back in this one. So I'm going to give it, you know, a fair shake. Although it doesn't have the best of user reviews on the PC version, which has been apparently out or perhaps in beta since May 2021. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. Again, that shovelware title sounding one. It'd be funny if it turns out being like a really banger game, but no fucking way. No fucking way.
That title, holy shit. There's a lot going on there. But it sounded like when I said Apollo Justice that you perked up a little bit there, Lockie.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, all of the Ace Attorney games are just fucking wonderful. So I will give you... This will probably be my least favorite iteration because it's meant to be like an American court version of it. And I really love the Japanese historical and customary sort of stuff that they weave into it. And even like a little bit of the Shinto and Buddhism culture. I'll still give it a go because I know it's being produced by the same people. So hopefully they do something cool with it. I don't know. Maybe they'll go into Native American culture a little bit or something. That could be neat.
Well, look, just to be fair, the Apollo Justice, the Ace Attorney trilogy is a... I don't know if it's a remake or a remaster or just a re-release of games from back in 2001.
They never make new games. I'm totally cool with that. I haven't played the Apollo one, so I'm cool with that.
Okay, cool. Awesome, yeah. Well, look, for me, nothing on here stands out to me. Tekken 8, I'll be definitely looking to Anthony to see what he thinks about it because he is the fighting game freak around all of us. But yeah, other than that, nothing really stands out to me. But that'll do us for the games coming up in the next week. How about we take a brief break and then we'll jump back on in with the games that we've been playing.
Woo!
Lockie, we don't have a guest, and that works out very well because I've actually got two things that I want to talk about, and they're both pretty brief. So I'll get it kicked off. The first thing that I want to talk about, and I don't remember if you were on this episode or not, but like a month or two ago, I was reading through the games coming up in the next week, and I read a title that made
That's your one to do.
My brain go fucking melted, and it was... Bang on Balls, : Chronicles. And at the time, I was like, what the fuck is this? And I think I looked it up when we were doing the episode.
I get : Chronicles as well.
Exactly. And it just looked like a fun platformer. And I had a look and all the Steam reviews were mostly positive, I think, or overwhelmingly positive. And so that's all I was going off. I didn't watch a YouTube video, nothing, just based on the title, snippets of the trailer, and just seeing that it had positive reviews on Steam. And this is the first time I've done that for a game in a very, very long time, and I put it on my wish list on PlayStation, and it came on special for like $24 or something like that, around that price. And I have to say, I had a great time banging on some balls, that's for sure. So, as I mentioned before, yes, it is a platformer. You play a customizable ball character, and all living things in this universe are balls. So all the bosses you're fighting are giant balls of various kinds. All the enemies you fight are all balls, but they're all dressed up in different fantastic fun ways and in different things.
The next Indiana Jones game is about a great ball.
There you go. It wouldn't surprise me if there was some Indiana Jones references in here because, yes, there's plenty of references in this game. So the way they sort of set it up is you're chasing this bad ball boss guy who's an actor, and he keeps jumping into all these various film worlds. The first one being a Viking world. The next one is the space race. So it's like all 1980s themed around the space race, and you got to try and launch an American rocket into the air and a Russian rocket into the air. The next one's based around a Kraken and summoning a Kraken in like a pirate world, and the last world is all to do with Japan and kaiju battles, and it's really
this looks amazing.
It's really, really fucking cool. Now, the gameplay is very simple. You got your double jump, you press R2 to attack and L2 to block, and that's really about it. The R2 also dashes you, but it's really based on like the different items that you find around the world that mix up your gameplay. So I found an ice wand that if I ran into enemies, it would freeze them. And that would sort of cool down on a timer. I managed to get a jetpack, which would let me not only double bounce, but also hover around as well too, so I could get around the maps a bit better. It really reminded me in its game design of Goat Simulator 3, in that basically you're thrown into like these interesting worlds to run around and sort of solve puzzles to some degree, like platforming based puzzles, but the puzzles in Goat Simulator,
sandbox,
you got to think about a bit more. You got to, like, you know, oh, what are they hinting at with this, and then try and find it throughout the world, whereas this is more, they give you like a bit more clear stuff to do. You'll get to an area and you'll see, oh, there's like these four chains here, I probably have to try and break those chains to solve whatever it is I'm doing here. In that sense, it feels very much like it's very much feels like it's designed for teenagers, I think, this game, because, like, you know, there's a tiny bit of crude humor in the Viking world. There's these big pots of mead, and if you jump in the mead, it makes you get a bit slow and dizzy for a while. You can press left button to whistle, but if you hold left button, you fart. Like, really dumb humor shit like that. But I don't know.
A little bit younger.
There's basically a hub world, which is the movie studios, and then the four different levels, which are those ones I explained before, and then a boss battle, and that's the entirety of the game here. You can finish it pretty quickly, I'd say, if you just went mainline and just did exactly what you needed to do to finish the game. You could probably finish it in like 6 or 7 hours, but I would argue you're missing out on a lot, because you can actually spend a lot of time exploring each of these four worlds, and there's just interesting surprises all along the way, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah, bang on balls. I end up really enjoying, and I bought this without ever looking at the trophy list, and when I did look at the trophy list, I was very happy to see it has a very, very easy platinum. The entire platinum trophy is just farting in various places throughout the game. I feel like it's a troll in itself on trophy hunters, this platinum trophy, because, yeah, it's just very, very silly. So, I don't know. You can also play this co-op as well, too. So, if you have a friend that you want to jump into this with, I think it's multiplayer only. I'm not sure how many people can play it at a time, but I don't think you would get much more out of it having a friend with you, other than you're just going to have some company. There are certain puzzles you'll be able to solve easier if you have a friend with you, but that's really about it. But yeah, I had a great time with Bang on Balls, and I was very surprised by it. I will give Bang on Balls 11 bangs out of 15 balls. It was a good old time. I really enjoyed it, especially if you want an easy platinum trophy. Fucking, that's an easy recommend. But yeah, I know. What do you think of Bang on Balls, Lockie? What do you think of the look of it?
Yeah. No, it looks like a really quality title. Just like graphically, what goes into it, everything looks really polished and smooth. Yeah, it looks excellent. The only thing that might sort of disengage me a bit is that it's probably intended for a slightly younger audience, but
yeah,
hey, if it's a good platformer, it's a good platformer. I'll fucking eat that shit up. It's something that that just calls to attention, and it's been a pet peeve of mine from day one, since like all Steam of all time, is that this game is only available on PC, and if you go to Steam, the user reviews are overwhelmingly positive, so that's a really good sign. It's like, shit, you know, if you're even vaguely interested in that type of game, you should probably give it a go. But you then go to, like, other websites that are outside of Steam, like Metacritic, and there's only like 8 people that have put reviews on it. So it's, I don't know, it's just one of those things where it's a shame. I don't understand why this phenomenon happens with sort of AA sort of release games that release on Steam.
Yeah.
But you don't really, like, Steam doesn't recommend me games like this, and I don't understand why not. So I just don't, and if I try to actively search for these games by, like, going into their search feature and go sort by user reviews, because let's be real, that's the most important thing when evaluating a game, I get shit straight at the top called, like, all of this anime shit, like, Holocure Save the Fans. Yeah. There's no fucking way that that game is, like, you know, the best game ever, right?
Hmm.
It's just endless shit.
Yeah.
Cats Hidden in Jungle Jam, Asprite, A Short Hike, They Look Like Low-Budget Shovelware, Dev Cats Collection, For Gifts, Dev Cats, Papa's Freezeria,
yeah,
Deluxe,
I get
a bundle full of cats. Yeah. No, I'm going to keep doing this. Project Cat, Tom, which is not that good a game. LB, like, that's the first actual game that I've, that actually, like, exists and maybe should be considered to be played, but it's not that good. Like,
how is Stray not up there? It feels like
the overwhelmingly positive. Yeah, it's fucking, like, the Steam search engine and the Steam sort of, like, rating system is completely broken from an archiving standpoint. Like, it never tells me what is actually good. Like, it exists, and it's only through these things where people say, hey, you got to check this out. It's how I find out about it. It's mind-boggling. I'm just scrolling through it. Juice Galaxy, Epithelium in Love, Chop Goblins, Hello Charlotte. Like, this is just endless nonsense shit that aren't games.
Yeah, Steam's had a problem for a long, long time with game curation. Basically, I think the rules are now, if you have $100, you can put your game on Steam. So long as you can hope to make that back, like, people just put whatever trash on there they basically can, really. And I think, to speak to Bang on Balls, like, I think it's a victim of being able to be sort of found and having a community on Steam, but then just not having any marketing behind them when they've come to the other platforms. Because, yeah, as I said, I played this on PlayStation, and I heard nothing out of this other than when I was looking up the games coming up in the next week. That's how I found out about Bang on Balls. So I've heard no one else talking about it. I don't think it's going to be a big thing on PlayStation. It kind of sucks because it's a fun, neat little game. Lockie, if you're expecting good platforming, though, it's very, very simple platforming. I think the fun with this game really comes more with exploring the environments and seeing all the little jokes that the developers have put in and that kind of thing.
It's like it's a sandbox goat simulator style game.
Yeah, sure. Exactly right. Exactly right. Except probably a bit more on the platforming side than Goat Sim, which is more on the wacky joke side.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But yeah great game. Good. Recommend. All right. That's for sure. What have you been playing?
Oh, cool. So I've been playing Doka V, which is the Pokemon knockoff that everyone's been waiting for. No, I'm joking, because that's been in dev hell for like 4 years. I had to look it up the other day because I was like, wasn't there this really awesome game that was going to, like, you know, sort of throw a spanner into the works of the Pokemon industry in a big way, and everyone was going to love it.
Lucky.
But that game is still being developed. I don't know.
You have no idea, like, the satisfaction I got when you told me the title of that, because I feel like there was multiple times last year where I thought about that game and I tried to look it up and I could not fucking find it. I was looking up, like, Game Awards 2020, because I was like, did I see it at the Game Awards or was it at this PlayStation event? And I'm typing in, like, weird Japanese, or sorry, weird Korean game with insane physics, and just nothing's coming up.
That's gonna, like, totally change everything for the better, and it's gonna be awesome, like, and it just never happened. It's a shame, because, like, it looks so good, and I think that's why it's resonated with people, when it's just sort of stuck in the recesses of their mind of, like, wait, no, there was something that gave me hope, but it never happened. Well, what's the deal?
Yeah, I hope Doka V still happens, because that's some weird shit. I just want to see what the fuck it ends up being.
Oh, I think it's going to end up being like a Kingdom Hearts type game, to be honest. Uh-huh. Like, but in an open world sandbox of, I don't know, some random Korean town, from what I could see in the thing. Which is cool, because we don't get enough of random Korean towns in video games. So, like, giddy up.
Let's go.
But No, the biggest tension in the world to lead into the actual game that I've been playing is Power World, which is another Pokemon-esque game. And that, my God, it's a jack-of-all-trades type of game where it wants to have a little bit of Pokemon in there. It wants to have a little bit of Minecraft survival sim in there. It wants to have guns in there. So, like, it's juggling a few balls, which is interesting.
Oh, like bang on balls.
Yeah, a little bit like bang on balls. No, nothing like bang on balls, but it's got balls. That's the theme of today's show. Balls.
The great circle. Balls.
The great circle. The ball. shit. I don't even know what I'm saying. All right, so yeah, I've been playing Our World, which I believe is in beta. You can get it for free on Game Pass. I saw it on Steam, and I'm kind of shitting with Game Pass at the moment. So being a spiteful bitch, I just paid full price for it, which was $40. So totally reasonable, because I really love the idea of games that are Pokemon-esque sort of coming and quality, looking good, looking like it's got a bit of polish to it, coming into the world. I can only see that as a positive thing, because now Nintendo's going to have to actually have some competition and look at that and go, all right, these new entities are coming in. They might be honing in on our racket. How do we survive? How do we adapt? And hopefully that doesn't just mean that they just buy them all out and close them down. Hopefully that means that they're going to start thinking about investing a little bit more time and quality and polish into their products and trying a few things, making a few risks. So I see that as a good thing. Competition breeds, you know, better quality products, theoretically.
Hell yeah.
So this game is definitely still in beta, but it looks fucking good. Like, the graphics are there. The polish on that standpoint is there. I didn't really experience any jank or really any bugginess other than the occasional whatever the fuck they're called, monsters clipping in and out of sort of like cliffs and stuff. But that stuff is to be expected in a beta. I'm enjoying it very much. The experience is the way you would sort of deal with Minecraft from the beginning of the game, except for when it's nighttime, you don't have like the hordes of the monsters coming at you. You do get the occasional monster attack, so it does happen sometimes during the day as well. And that's sort of your, like, your comfy home point, where you keep on top of that, you make sure that your monsters are fed and thriving and capturing, doing resources, and you're sort of chipping in as well. But really the core game is, I think they want you to have that, but go out into the world, capture more, whatever the fuck they're called, Palpatines, and like start and get stronger, and you got to catch them all, and you got to be the greatest like no one ever was, and you got to stop Team Rocket. Their Team Rocket is a crime syndicate, and they have guns. I think 4 hours into the game, I've only just gotten like the gist of the game. I think that's where it's going. I haven't been able to explore much outside of the first island, so there are several islands I can see on the map, so I'm hoping, wow, that means that there's going to be more stuff to it. I wonder what happens. And so I'm quite keen. I think with that sort of game design in play, where you can actually, you know, leap into the fray, use your own Minecraft weapons to fight alongside your pal mons, you know, use some skills and things. I'm enjoying it. The only thing that I'm little bit, I would prefer for a straight up game that didn't have any of this Minecraft survival tactics, because that's just a personal preference. But I think what they've done with it is really quality. It's there. And I think it's going to take off in a huge way, because this is one of those types of games where it's not creative in the way that, like, oh, they thought up these new crazy ideas and it's going to shake up the world. They're just taking core concepts of what works in other games and mashing them together and seeing what works. And I love it. I'd love to see more of that happen, because I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet. Because it's great. So I'm extremely optimistic about this game once it actually does get to its proper release, being a quality title. I think it's taken off in a huge way as well. I think last time I saw online, it's had over 300,000 Steam purchases alone. So people have chosen to not get it for free through the Game Pass if they maintain a Game Pass subscription, and just pay the $40. So that's great. They're making a bit of money there. Apparently the servers are getting absolutely inundated and overloaded because they don't have the infrastructure to support, you know, the amazing reception that it's received so far. But I think this franchise is going to get a lot of love, and I can't wait to see how its current title grows and evolves. I can't wait to see what their future titles will bring once they've got a great establishment and they can invest a little bit more in advance as well. It's exciting times.
Yeah, I believe we talked about it on the show whenever it was first shown off at a game event. It might have just been the Game Awards, but it was just looked like, yeah, Pokemon with guns, but that was enough to have me intrigued. And we've been chatting about it in our like little
NTR chat. Literally everyone else on the fucking planet. Yeah,
that's right. And we've been chatting about it a bit in our N2R chat. And I know Aaron was definitely excited about it this week. And I feel like most of us said to him, Aaron, you're going to hate this game. Like you just want to get in there and fight. You don't like menus and crafting and slow paced games like those. Yeah. And surprisingly, it's resonated with him. He's been having a great time. It's managed to keep his attention for a whole fucking day at the very least, which is pretty impressive. I thought he would have been out within the first couple of hours. And you're right, Lockie, it's been a smash hit. The developers have said that Pocket Pair, I believe they're called, they've said that apparently they've sold over 2 million units. That's making me wonder, are they including Game Pass download units in that as well?
They do, and that's why I fucking hate the concept of those Game Pass things, because I don't think they make much money on, you know, if it's done through the Game Pass subscription thing, they'd be making, I imagine, you know, like 5% of what they would make if you just bought it direct off.
Oh, yeah, they definitely take a hit for sure. I believe they just get a lump sum for the game, no matter how many downloads it gets, but it probably does vary.
Oh, well, that's even worse.
As far as each deal that they make with it. Funnily enough, there's been a bit of controversy around this game as well, too, and I feel like I should bring it up. So there is no confirmation that AI art has been used in this game. But these developers do have a history of using AI in their games. A game they released like a year or two ago was called AI Art Imposter, and it was a game that used generative AI as a mechanic in the game itself, which, you know, I don't necessarily have a problem with if they weren't already just stealing art from other artists. The CEO, I believe, has made comments about how much he loves generative AI and even had tweeted out in 2021 about a way that you could generate Pokemon with generative AI and come up with new Pokemon models, which leads me to probably the biggest criticism of this, in which a lot of people are claiming that they've very much just ripped off a lot of Pokemon designs. And if you look at them, I'd say, yeah, that's very fair criticism. There's like, God, there's sheep in this that just look like Mareep. There's like a Lucario clone. There's so many that you can see they've either just changed the color palette or moved a few things around and been like, yep, it's a new Pokemon now, and I'm sure they gave it a different name as well. Has that been your experience? Have you found that most of them have been knockoffs, or have you found a lot of things that you wouldn't recognize in the Pokemon series?
No, look, Pokemon's been running for a very long time, and you gotta remember that Pokemon is basically an anime depiction of mostly real world creatures or creatures combined or having elemental components incorporated into that. So it's kind of like, you know, there is a limitation to how much different you'll see within that. So no, I'm not seeing like eldritch horror tentacle monsters where my brain can't comprehend. I'm seeing things that, yeah, I could see they're anime depictions of animals that are echoed in real life. Now, whether or not they are like for like comparison, some of them are really close, or some of them are closer for sure. There's like a cat one that kind of reminds me of Meowth, but it's pink and it kind of looks like shit. But that's the thing, like, you know, that's fine. I mean, as long as they're not straight off ripping off the IP, and you know, this would be their goal as well, to keep away from those nasty Game Freak lawyers, which we know, like, love to shut down anything that's fun and that people enjoy that isn't Pokemon, allegedly. Yeah, the Marowak one's a good example. Yeah, it looks like a sheep, but it doesn't look identically like Marowak. It's actually, in my opinion, a lot cuter. It's a fucking, like, it's this cute chibi sheep, and it's way cuter than the Marowak thing. So I don't think it's a fair comparison. I think, yes, it's deeply inspired, and it is deeply inspired by Pokemon. Yes, that's its roots. Yes, it's derivative as hell, but is it its own thing? Yes, and I see that as a good thing overall.
Yeah. For me, yeah, the Pokemon ripoffs aren't the bigger thing. If they are using generative AI, that is a bit of a weird thing for me. I don't like the work being taken
away from
artists.
I don't like it as a core concept, but I'm more comfortable with emerging developers and, you know, the little guys leaning into it more so than I am the big hitters.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. I guess just that tweet from a couple of years ago talking about how they can come up with Pokemon models using AI has just got people worried that did they just, you know, say, oh, Charmander, but not, and put it into fucking whatever the AI apps
are. I mean, you know, well, if you think of humans and the human brain as kind of like a really shitty computer, which it basically is, like the way the brain works is it runs on electrical impulses and shit. So, like, you know, like, now we're going really, really into esoteric shit. Like, there's no soul. We're all just the shittiest version of machines, and eventually we're going to give birth to machines that will well and truly make us obsolete. But it's kind of like, you know, there is a limit to all art form, and most art is derivative. So do you call it a knockoff or do you call it inspiration? I would say this is inspired by that. Mm. I don't think they're trying. I think a knockoff is when you're trying to ignore that it's not being deeply inspired by something else, which I don't think it is. I don't think they believe that they're doing something that's wildly different to Pokemon before that. I think they're well and truly aware that, like, it is a Pokemon derivative content, but they are doing enough with it to be its own thing.
Yeah, I think I'd have a big problem with it, or a bigger problem with it, if they were doing like a turn-based RPG, you know, had a very similar story to Pokemon or something like that. But I can't see a survival game with guns really being that similar gameplay-wise to Pokemon. Is there any kind of Pokemon story thread in the beta so far, or early access?
There is, but it's bare bones. So, like,
yeah.
But also, I'm super early into the game, so I've just it takes you like 3 to 4 hours to just get like past the initial Minecraft sort of survival setup, which I don't really like all that much. I would rather just get it to it and explore the game and catch Pokemon, Palmon, whatever. I don't know, Palamutes, Marmaduke. See, everything's derivative. Everything's, like, you know, a derivation of something else.
Yeah.
Like, shit, That's fair. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do? And what are we saying if we're in support of Game Freak being able to be the only ones that can make anime of animals, basically? Like, let's get into it. You know, like I think either we say that and we're never going to have anything different from what we currently have in the what they're putting to the table, or we say, no, it's fine for people to be inspired and for these things to inspire future content and artists to try their own things but incorporate, you know, that shit. Because that essentially is what AI do. They incorporate what already exists and then they, you know, spit out something a little bit different, which is not a good thing, but that's how humans work as well. All I'm saying is that that's how the human brain works in terms of, like, you know.
It does, but I think, you know, being a human, we do put things like our own personal emotion and stuff like that, even if we are being inspired by other art. It's definitely, there's a lot more soul to a human you know, getting inspiration for something and then doing their own version of it than just an AI that's just using an algorithm just to spit something out. But regardless of that, there's no evidence thus yet that they have used AI in PAL World.
So I don't know, man. You tell me that last Star Wars trilogy had soul in it and I'll concede, but I don't know, man. The shit humans are putting out. Pretty mechanical these days.
Okay, well, yeah, you're not talking about humans. You're talking about Disney, the corporation, there might be some humans that work.
They're comprised of people, mate. They're comprised of hive mind people. This is the thing. Like, I'm talking about, like, the humans in the 90s and 80s, way more creative and doing their own shit than now. We're all just like, all we've got is Spider-Man movies. Yeah, but that's
Yeah, there's still plenty of people who are creative in that. It's just fucking corporations have banked on stuff that is purely either nostalgia or already they know that they can sell. And that's why we're stuck with just the most creatively bereft shit that comes out when it comes to the bigger stuff. And it's not studios like Disney and all these big game companies that are going to be affected by AI. They fucking love it. They're going to save a ton of money that they would have had to have spent on artists. It is the struggling artists and the smaller artists who are getting completely fucked over by AI art. And they do still create awesome creative stuff. We should be supporting them as much as we can. But anyway, that's another thing.
I totally agree. I think the world as it is on the whole is pretty generic.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, if you're just to compare, if you're just to look at like a curve or analyze the trends of, you know, the level of creative shit, new genres, new stuff coming out, I think we're kind of already like we're in the way that AI works, we're kind of like, you know, circling the drain here. But it is nice to see like the occasional breath of fresh air.
Anyway,
that's an entirely different thing. I mean, Stranger Things is the culmination of that. It's a globbing together of all of the 80s references, but delivered in a fresh way.
Yeah.
Derivative as hell, but high quality content, but also, you know, like representation of like where we're heading. So, AI bad on the whole. I don't care so much though, with reaming like the smaller developers overdoing it. I think reserve that shit for the big hitters because they're the ones that have the biggest impact on the industry in any case. And if they, and they're the ones that are in a position to actually implement like political change and legislation and regulation. So you go after them, don't go after the little guys.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Well, as I said, I'm not coming for PAL World. There's no evidence so far. There's nothing confirming that they've used generative AI in PAL World anyway. So
even if they use, I don't give a fuck. Go after Square Enix. They've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm all for that as well. Do you have anything left to say on PAL World?
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to sinking my teeth into this one. I get the feeling that it's still, you know, it's still not quite fully a game, but what is there is so encouraging. I'm confident it'll be a good quality product when it is finally fully released, and I'm excited for what this company will bring.
If they don't get bought out
by Nintendo lawyers or get sued into oblivion.
Well. I played something that was also in early access, still is actually. I don't know if it's available for anyone to play at the moment. I don't think there's any betas running, but I can't say my hopes are anywhere near as high as yours, Lockie. Now, I did mention on last week's episode that I had played Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and look, I can't...
Suicide Squad, Kill the Franchise, fuck's sake. And please.
Look, I couldn't say anything earlier because there was a NDA out on all the pre-release Suicide Squad.
Oh, did you have to sign an NDA? Whoa.
Well, it's like, yeah, like just like one on your console, basically, like before the beta pops up, you gotta like hit X to say yes to the NDA. Even while you're playing the game, it has your username sprayed across the screen everywhere, so if you did try to release any footage that they'd know exactly who it was. Yeah.
That in and of itself is kind of mind-blowing. Is this, like, one of the first iterations of that shit, like, being done so widespread?
No, I believe closed betas were always very much like this. I know, like, you know, Hogwarts Legacy got leaked because they were showing it to people in fucking shopping malls and shit, and someone filmed it on their phone, and none of that shit. No one even knew that Hogwarts Legacy existed at that point. Wow. So yeah, it's been around for a bit. Like, we've seen a fair few leaks over the years. There was one where someone leaked, like, it was some Death Stranding content, I think, and it had a guy there, and you could see the reflection of him in his laptop and his nipple the whole way through because he was filming it on his phone. Great stuff.
That's so weird. For a long time. That's great. Yeah, long live the internet.
Look, I've really felt like I've had to bite my tongue about this game because it's basically everything that I have grown to hate over the years as far as live service games are concerned. Now, basically...
So you're basically just confirming what everyone already knew.
Yeah, like, look, so basically Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is a full live service game. So they keep dancing around it. When the first sort of images of the menus came up and you saw all the gear scores, there was definitely like this whole, just sort of ignoring all the buzzwords that people would sort of associate with live service. They were very much dancing around it, not wanting to say it's a live service game, but it is a live service game in every way possible. You have those gear scores. You have like a menu lobby where other players will jump into your game. You have different outfits you can buy. It's littered with microtransactions. The mission design is literally go to spot on map, kill enemies, and then go to next spot and kill enemies. Or it might be go to spot on map, keep enemies out of this area. Just the most generic kind of defense missions. Mode,
yep.
The enemies are just fodder to shoot. I couldn't differentiate between the different enemies. It was just something there to shoot, basically, and something to take up my time. It is rough. Okay. It is really rough. The game ran pretty well, especially for something that's in a closed beta. I did have a few bugs. But as far as the moment-to-moment gameplay, it all seemed to be functioning quite well. The character models are absolutely stunning. The writing is quite decent. It did have me chuckling every now and again. But I'd see these awesome cutscenes, which, you know, you get to the cutscene by going to go stand in a circle that they put on the map, and then the cutscene starts like they do in every other looter. It just... You can just feel, just like with Marvel's Avengers before it, that holy shit, there could have been a really good game here if they just made a single player Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League game and just not worried about all these microtransactions and bullshit. I liked it better than the Avengers game that I played. I probably had a bit more fun with Suicide Squad, but that's not saying a whole lot. Avengers was not a very good game.
Yeah, I'm so glad I haven't played that game and I don't want to play this game. I just... You know, there's just some things in life where you just know, at least based on your own preferences and what you like and don't like, that, like, you know, that it's poison. It's like knowing instinctively, don't touch that, it'll kill you. That's how I feel about this game.
Yep. Yep. No, you're not... you're not wrong. It's just... it's so disappointing to see. The Arkham series is a series that's so near and dear to my heart. And they've made a game.
You saw Gotham Knights, man.
Oh, that was...
You saw it. You saw where it was going.
That was rough. But at least that wasn't Rocksteady, you know? And this one was Rocksteady. It's the developer that we love that made like one of the best game trilogies ever, in my opinion. And they've just... made something that collectively everyone said, we don't want this from you. You know, no one really asked for this anyway. The shooting feels fine.
It's a Gollum game.
The traversal is interesting. So Captain Boomerang throws his boomerang and then you use Speed Force to rush to wherever the boomerang is, and it feels super, super weird to play that way. But once you get the hang of it, it's kind of cool. Deadshot has a jetpack, so you can jetpack around while you're shooting. Harley Quinn has some Batman gadget that lets her just grapple to nothing, because like a drone shoots up and she can just swing through the air off the drone.
Can I just... All the comic people are going to be upset, but Deadshot has always been like the most boring, creatively bankrupt character I've ever heard of, and they're always a prominent character in the Suicide Squad, and it's just a guy that shoots them.
Yep.
And his name is Deadshot.
Yup.
It's just so shit. That's just the shittest thing. I just wanted to point that out. He's just an army guy. That's it. Yeah, like, he shoots things.
I feel like every single, you always have those copies of certain heroes. Mm-hmm.
You got Harley Quinn with a mallet that's bonking people on the head. You have a shark that's just straight up eating people. You have Captain Boomerang, which is an Aussie bloke chucking a boomerang. So at least it's funny, like it's comical. And then you just have a guy that shoots.
Yeah.
And his name is the guy that shoots. It's just so strange. Sorry.
No, you're right though. But it's how it's always worked, I guess, with DC and Marvel. You'll have the one that gets popular on one side, and then the one that they copy with on the other is usually pretty shit. So, like, you know, Deadshot is DC's Deadpool, and obviously Deadpool's a million times cooler.
But he's nothing like Deadpool. Deadpool is like, yep. Tongue in cheek, comical, breaking the fourth wall, whereas Deadshot is straight up just some guy that shoots
him. Yup. Spot on.
So, like, it's not even like a good knockoff. Like,
yeah.
If that was the goal that they set out to do, like, what the fuck happened? Why are they so boring?
Yup.
Why aren't they funny and wacky with their Deadshots? Like, why can't they move their gun bullets around in a comical fashion or something, like rubber, or, you know, just some crazy shit? Crazy. Sorry, I got a cough lolly in my mouth, and I'm just remembering that this is probably not the best audible quality for Alex. I apologize.
Oh, good. Look, regardless of that, most of what you're doing is shooting anyway, so I guess Deadshot works really well for this game. It's
so fucking dumb. It's just so uncreative.
Yeah, well, think of any looter shooter. You got your shooting, and then your things that are on cooldown, and that's what you get. The thing that actually makes this stand
out... It's just a comic book thing that I just hate Deadshot as a cool concept.
He sucks. He's a shit character. The only thing that sets this out from other live service games of its kind is the traversal, which is just kind of weird and kind of interesting. Takes a bit to get used to. But outside of that, it's not doing anything interesting. And like, some of the story beats I thought were kind of cool, but the way it was told is just not... It's not interesting to me to do a boring mission and then just go somewhere and watch a fucking cutscene. And that's very much what this game is. It's just a shadow of its former self. I'm so disappointed to see what's coming out with Suicide Squad. In saying that, you know, I might actually pick it up just to have something to play through with Hunter, because it looks like it'll be an okay looter shooter thing. But is it what I want from Rocksteady? Fuck no. Yeah. I would so much rather this be a single-player game, or them tackle a different superhero, or just do a new IP. How about something new, for fuck's sake? Like, something that isn't just a regurgitation of something we've seen 1,000 times before. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. So, listeners out there, if you've got a hunter in your life, then maybe this game might be able to scratch that itch somewhat. Otherwise,
if you like live service games, you know, if you're not already obsessed with shit. Destiny or Borderlands,
so listeners, then... if you really like shit, if you've got some sort of coprophagia or coprophilia, like, yeah, it might be up your alley. But otherwise,
yeah, there you go. If you're into self-flagellation,
maybe raise your standards, dum-dum. Like, I don't know. 2024, baby. I'm going to get a lot more abusive.
Oh, dearie me. Well, look, it was just a closed beta, so no review scores and stuff, obviously. But I just wanted to make sure I warned our listeners before the game came out. Though I'm sure you've probably already heard there's been tons of discourse. Oh, there's been that screenshot of the UI going around, and like
yeah, I saw that yeah, one.
Oof. Anthony sent it in the chat, and like if you compare it to like a joke UI that was made for Elden Ring as a joke to make fun of messy UIs, it looks so fucking similar. It is wild how similar that looks.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just so many issues with Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. It's not that. It's live service. The most live service game to ever. Live service.
More like unalive service, am I right, folks?
And that'll do us for news to reviews for another week. Lockie, thanks for being here to talk about the future of news to reviews and all the interesting stuff we got to talk about this week, especially considering
we kind of incorporated the past as well. It's been a real, like...
It's been a roller coaster.
It's been a roller coaster. No, of course. No, and I'm so happy to be here. I enjoy the show as well. I love talking about the industries. I love talking about games I feel really passionate about. So I'm glad that we can keep on going. I'm looking forward to what comes out in 2024. It looks like the hype train won't slow down on a couple of things. I'd really love to get fucking DLC on Elden Ring now that you bring that up.
Ooh,
is that shit coming out? Come on. It's probably 2025 at this point.
Look, we talked about it on Anticipated Games, which we recorded mid-December. And even at that point, even between now and then, there's still been no news about it. So fingers crossed it comes out this year. I've got to imagine it will, like, because at this point, it's going to be as much development time as the fucking game itself. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, we've got to hope. Yeah, you're right. It's mind-boggling how long it's taking for their DLC follow-up to come out. They might as well just release a new title at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. All right.
I mentioned at the start of the episode, we're going to be moving to monthly episodes. So the next episode will be the first Monday or Tuesday of February. And then it will be, the first Monday or Tuesday.
Think of us like your little period fairy.
Yes, exactly right. We'll be the thing that comes once a month that you actually look forward to, hopefully.
Yep, and if you don't see us come, maybe get tested. You might have a little bundle of joy coming. Who knows?
Oh, everyone out there, I'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Lockie, you got any words of wisdom, or was that it? Get tested.
That was my word of wisdom.
Yep. No, I agree with that. Get tested, and everyone out there, take care of yourselves, and take care of one another. So, I made a coffee in the break, and I always make Mocha's. I put some chocolate powder in there, and I managed to put the chocolate powder into the jar that I keep my pods in, rather than into the mug to make the Mocha.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you just had a brain fart.
Yep.
You had a singing moment. That's nice.
Like, if you ever, like, accidentally, like, poured milk, like, directly into the cereal box or some shit like that, you know, it's, like, just that absent-minded fucking...
Yeah. I've had some close calls like that, for
Put
sure.
Put orange juice in your cornflakes and milk in your glass or whatever. Yeah.
Or something that's not toast in the toaster. Like, yeah, I've had some close calls, for sure. It's all right.
I'm cooking pancakes in the toaster.
That's right. All right, cool.